This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, East Baton Rouge Parish, and Baton Rouge Investar Tower is the place where this show originates. We begin our show with Fred Columbus Dent III, and he is the financial analyst of renown who began his career on October 19, 1987, Black Monday. And 37 years later, almost, he's still doing his thing. And today, speaking of dates, is the 100th anniversary of the birth in Omaha, Nebraska, April 3rd, 1924, of Marlon Brando, born one century ago. Best actor, 1955, On the Waterfront, also won the Oscar in 1973 for The Godfather. And in 1979, when he was making the memorable film Apocalypse Now, he was on the set and somebody asked him about the big star of the time, a guy who looked a lot like him, Burt Reynolds. And Marlon Brando, Robin Dow, I think, has pulled up Marlon Brando commenting about Burt Reynolds in 1979. She says, wait a second, so let's bring it up. I thought it was ready, and do we have it? Here we go, I think. I think we may have to delay it. Okay.
While we're waiting, Marlon Brando made a lot of money in his movies. I think he was paid millions for Apocalypse Now. But he also had several wives and ended up paying a lot of child support and alimony. So
yeah, he definitely lived a full life. He had one, two, three wives and lots of girlfriends and had a tragic life of sorts. His childhood friend was Wally Cox from Hollywood Squares. Did you know that?
Did not know that. And yeah. That's quite a juxtaposition.
Mr. Peepers,
also.
His best friend, yeah. And
Wally Cox.
That's pretty good. Remember Hollywood Squares with Charlie Weaver and Paul Lynde? And the
Paul
host
Lynde,
was Peter Marshall.
Yep.
Yeah, Peter Marshall, whose son played Major League Baseball under his given name, which was Pete LeCocq. And Peter Marshall was the name that the game show host, and he's still alive, I believe. So,
most people don't know about Charlie Weaver, Jim, is that he had
Cliff Arquette,
and his family, like Barrymore's, they were all prolific actors. Many of the Arquette kids,
Rosanna and Patricia,
and David, they're all grandchildren of Charlie Weaver.
Of Charlie Weaver, and that was quite a show. So Robin found this cut, and I don't want our audience to miss it. It is funny because Marlon Brando was a guy who, he changed his voice a bit at times, and of course he changed his appearance dramatically in The Godfather, but here he was. He didn't like Burt Reynolds a lot, and Burt did look a lot like him, and Burt even commented that once as a young man he met Marlon Brando, and Brando was quite rude to him, and it was like a big disappointment because he idolized this guy. And then Brando in 1979, when he's making Apocalypse Now, acted as though he had never met Burt Reynolds.
No, I don't think he is. I think it's Burt Reynolds.
That's one of the reasons we're doing
it. Don't say that name around me.
You not like him?
He is the epitome of something that makes me want to throw up.
He's a nice guy.
He is?
You want to come in here?
Well,
No, you don't.
I don't know why I hate him.
So he is a nice guy, is that a thing?
He can't be. He's the epitome of everything that's disgusting about the thespian. Just holy. He has a,
where did you get that idea? I don't know him at all.
He worships at the temple of his own narcissism.
So, he didn't like Burt Reynolds. Burt did pretty well, but he never won an Oscar. And Marlon Brando won two for Best Actor, nominated other times, and is remembered as one of the great actors of all time. He died in Los Angeles, California, on the 1st of July, 2004, he got 80 years and became robustly obese, despite being, in his day, quite a specimen. But he let himself go. He made it 80 years, left quite a mark. Today, by the way, also is the birth date of Darren Mann, one of my good friends who has been in my world now for more than 30 years. Fine fellow who was born on this date in 1966. Few years, he was born on Marlon Brando's 42nd birthday. But Fred Columbus Dent, speaking of numbers, the last few days have been not so good for the Dow Jones Industrial Average because presumably of interest rates, concern about them not being lowered because the economy is perking along a little too well What do you make of this, and is it an overreaction? Your thoughts?
It's a standard pullback. Remember, the S&P last year was up well over 22%. And so far, year to date, it's up about 10%. So we've had some giant leaps forward recovering out of this latest bear market that we had. And to pull back a little bit like this is just a little froth on the ocean, but it's not big news.
You have been studying how people retire, and it's the old adage that you don't want to outlive your money. And most Americans, as we know, don't have an abundance of money. In fact, most Americans could not immediately pay off a $400 debt.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. But how much do we need to retire?
Well, there's a survey that came out, was published in today's Wall Street Journal. The magic number, according to 4,000 plus respondents in a Northwestern Mutual survey, asking about what they need for retirement, that magic number on average was $1.46 million. Now, this is a subjective number. It's not people doing any, I suspect, any heavy analysis and mathematical numbers. I think they're just throwing out numbers of what would make them feel good in retirement. But $1.5 million. The other thing about these respondents is those who were surveyed said that their average net worth was significantly below that. They're off by about $1 million.
Well, a person who made a lot of money last week in the market was Donald John Trump with the advent on the New York, it's NASDAQ, isn't it? Truth Social, I believe.
The three-letter stock is,
DJT on the NASDAQ, yeah.
Yeah, well, they've changed that then.
But at one point made him one of the 500 richest people in the world, but shares of Trump Media and Technology Group tumbled 21% on Monday, and it represents a basic, even after a slight rise yesterday of 6%, represents a 39% plunge. But still, Trump is making a lot of money on Truth Social right now. There are, and
Jim,
a listener
Jim is
asked
not
about
actually,
this.
Not, he's not making a lot of money.
Well, so he's got to hold because he can't sell immediately. That's what a listener was asking about. Doesn't he have to hold for like 18 months?
He does, and that may solve some of his financial problems. But as a earnings of a company, I think they only made like $3 million of revenue.
Actually, I'm not even sure they made a profit.
Yeah, no, they're not making any money. And so when you're paying what today is $50 for a stock that has zero earnings, it's really more of a vanity play. You're just buying something based on personality.
But this is a way for his supporters to help him.
Yeah, if the stock price remains where it is.
And you know what? Those who got in at a certain level, they're making money too.
Yeah. They are. But those who bought it on the initial public offering, or when it started trading around $68, $70, they're down $20.
But his stake, and I'm reading from a current report, $4.1 billion, down from $6.3 billion. So $4.1 billion will get you in the higher ranks of net worth, wherever you are in the world.
Indeed.
And he, right now on paper, is a billionaire. But as we know, he's had some judgments that are high, but not anywhere close to $4.1 billion. So where is the market going this year? Because it was anticipated there would be three interest rate declines, reductions, and that may not happen.
Well, nobody knows where the market's going to go. Although typically election years are good for stocks because of the promises that the politician makes. And the outlook for the economy. But it's a double-edged sword because voters also vote with the economy. So if the economy doesn't stay robust between now and the election, it's not very good for the incumbent. And well, I think in the political realm, looking out, the biggest thing, depending on who is elected president, will be the tax effect, because the Trump tax cuts are set to renew in 2025. And if Trump is not in there and we don't have a Republican Congress, then most likely those cuts will not renew. Proponents of that cut say it's good for the economy, it's stimulative, but detractors say that it also increases the deficit. So that's going to be probably the biggest effect on the economy based on who's elected president.
And Tom on Bluebonnet asks about particular sectors. Are there sectors that look promising?
Well, let's talk about that, because diversification is something people forget about. The technology stocks have been really, really hot and made people a lot of money. But there are many investors are focusing on that, and yet they're negating other undervalued sectors of the economy, things that are fairly valued, like international stocks, small to mid-cap companies. Mm-hmm. Those are good buys right now, and then play a very important part of a diversified portfolio rather than chasing the big mm-hmm. meteor that's going on with growth stocks.
Another listener asks about the $1.5 million that people feel close to it, that they feel like they need. What's the exact number?
1.46 million.
Okay, right at 1.5. How do you get there? Let's say if you're 60 years old and you got $500,000 and you got to triple your net worth in 5 years if you want to retire at 65. What do you do?
Cut spending, reduce debt, save more.
You sound like Dave Ramsey.
Well, Ramsey has some good principles. Fidelity has a back of the cocktail napkin formula. They say that what you need is by age 67 to have saved 10 times your average annual salary. That's what you need for retirement. 10 times.
Okay. Well, thank you, Fred Dent. We'll call on you again next month. Always a pleasure. We'll be back after this with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. And our guest at this time is Christina Ball. For 4 years under Sue Gunter, she played college basketball at LSU. She came to Tigertown as a star guard, best player in the state of Louisiana in 1988. She came here with Chris Jackson, who became Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, and they did well on the court. Tigertown, Christina, 25 years ago, moved to California. She's been a teacher for 25 years. She was with us last year when LSU won the national championship, and she's a proud Tiger. And a few months ago, there was a reunion at the Assembly Center and on campus for Sue Gunter's players, as the court was named in honor of her, along with Coach Dale Brown. And Christina remains a Tiger fan through and through, and still lives in San Francisco, where she is watching the Tigers. And Christina, it is remarkable that LSU's women's basketball team is making news far and wide. And good morning.
Good morning, Jim. It's nice to be on your show again. Nice to talk to you.
Well, nice to talk with you. So you were able to follow the team and the travails of Kim Mulkey and her club from a few thousand miles away.
Yes. This year, definitely, I've kept up the most. And it's been wonderful to watch it and to see the program be so successful. And as we kind of mentioned, and everyone's talking about how women's basketball just in general continues to just grow and, get more and more fans. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people that continue to come up to me and that ask me. I don't tell everyone that I play. If it comes up, they'll find out that I played for LSU, but it's not something I lead with. But if they know, or even if they don't, they talk about it. And it's been pretty amazing to witness, and especially to see the growth since I played over 30 years ago. So.
Well, you're quite an ambassador, and you did come back home in February, and there was quite an event. And it is interesting that Kim Mulkey, who played at Louisiana Tech a few years before you played at LSU, and of course was quite a high school player in Hammond, she knew who you were, didn't she?
Yeah, when I went, we had the alumni weekend, like you mentioned, and it was a huge turnout. And we had a luncheon before the game. And, she's just so wonderful and charismatic. And I just wanted to say hello and, you know, thank her for her outreach to the alumni. That's one thing that she and her staff have really done since she took over, is the outreach to the alumni has been wonderful and very generous. So went up to her and she remembered I was from Bossier City. So that was pretty impressive. So it was great to speak with her. and see the other staff in person. Yeah, and see my teammates and a lot of the other alumni that were there to just for the whole weekend, and then also to honor the dedication of the court to Coach Gunner. So my teammates, they introduced us by decades because there were so many of us there. So it was a great turnout.
Well, Christina Ball played for LSU from 88 to 92, and she played with the great Pokey Chapman, who, of course, is on the record the most successful coach. She didn't win a national title, but she did win SEC titles and go to Final Fours, and she, of course, left quite a mark herself. She's in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame, as she should be. But I am told that as a thank you for your contributions, and I think it's true of the other members of the LSU basketball family, women's basketball family, that you actually got a piece of history as a result of the championship last year. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct, Jim. It was what a wonderful surprise. In December, I had a mystery package, unexpected, and I thought maybe my family sent me, you know, maybe this is another gift from my family in Louisiana. And I opened the package, and Coach Mulkey and the LSU women's basketball program sent us a piece of the championship floor, like the actual hardwood floor. It's mounted in this beautiful frame and stand, and it says, you know, it's an appreciation that we laid the foundation and that they were sharing a piece of the national championship with us, because to be exact with their words, we could not have won it if it weren't for the legacy you have helped pave. And so I, along with, you know, my teammates, we talked about it, how just taken aback at that. One, it's the coolest thing. I've never heard of it. I didn't know that they did that, where you actually get an actual piece of the hardwood floor. And then, you know, the fact that they shared that with us, it was just tremendous.
It
so
is
it's pretty cool. I have it on display.
Impressive gesture, yeah, as you should. Now, you saw the game, I'm sure, the other night, and Iowa won 94-87, and Caitlin Clark had 41 points. As a guard, particularly, you have to be impressed with her.
Definitely. Oh, yes. I mean, I've told people this. I'm a fan of the game of basketball first. I'm a fan of course, all basketball, but of course I'm particular and biased to women's basketball. So I am a fan of great basketball players and great skill and just the game. And so, of course, you know, I'm an LSU Tiger, but it's great to be able to appreciate the skill level and all the different players and just the greatness, not just with our LSU Lady Tigers, but also other teams like Caitlin. So, yeah, it's unbelievable. So the 3-point line is further than when I played. And then, you know, some of the, of course, what everyone talks about are the shots, and to watch that it's just, I have people, my niece who never doesn't really watch much, is interested. My neighbors are watching it, and it's because of just the growth of it and the skill level. So
now, Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry has urged state officials to enact a policy requiring student athletes to be present for the national anthem after the LSU women's basketball team received backlash for missing the national anthem before the game against Iowa Monday night in Albany. Now, this is nothing new, and the football team has also missed national anthems. I don't think this is a bad move, actually. Teams, I believe, should be present for the national anthem. But people are piling on, and it's not so pleasant right now for Coach Mulkey. She, of course, gets praise and criticism. Do you think this is being overplayed, or is it something that will be case in which it blows over pretty quickly?
You know, I know it's a really it's a topic that people have really strong feelings about, one way or the other. I know my father was the military and Air Force, and we grew up having that be a big thing. It's important, but I also recognize that not everyone. You know, I also feel like everyone should be able to have their expression and opinions. But I get what people are not happy about. But as far as the governor,
we'll spend a few more minutes with Christina Ball, a great LSU ambassador living in California. She played for the Tigers more than 30 years ago. She's very proud of LSU. We're back after this. Minkster, thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Christina Ball, a person who represents LSU well and does so on the West Coast. She's been a teacher for a quarter century now in San Francisco, left her home in Bossier City. Her dad was an Air Force veteran. Barksdale Air Force Base is where he served. That's where Christina went to school in high school, at Bossier's Parkway High. And for those of us who have parents who are military people, we certainly, I think it adds to the importance to stand and show respect for the country, for the national anthem. That said, I have no problem if somebody doesn't want to do what I do. It's their prerogative. But I do think the LSU team, no matter which team it is, should be present. And I think Governor Landry's on the right track by requiring the student athletes at colleges be present for the national anthem, as Iowa's team was the other night and LSU was not. And Kim Mulkey says it was not an intentional slight. It was something that involved her getting her team ready for the game, and they just happened to be in the locker room when the anthem was played. So I know some people are revved up, and we might take a call or two. And if you want to call in, we can. I'm sure John Milkovich, our next guest, has some thoughts about this as well. But Paul in Opelousas, I think, has been waiting the longest. Paul, well, good morning, sir. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. Just a quick question on this controversy. Did they stand last year? And did anybody make a comment when they won and whether they stood or not? Thank you. Bye.
I don't know. I'm not sure when this policy went into place. And, of course, in the game that followed LSU and Iowa, both teams stayed in the locker room. So it just made it more pronounced when Iowa was out there holding hands and LSU was not on the court. And I bet next year they'll be standing and or they'll be present. And if somebody doesn't want to stand, as I say, it's their prerogative. I don't think they should be punished for that. I wouldn't do it. I want to stand. Other people want to make a statement, and in this country, you're allowed to do that. And Christina, as you can tell, if I went to all the people on the line now, we'd be here for several more hours. But your thoughts about why this is so important to people like you, who had a dad who served our country, and I suspect your dad is probably Vietnam era, and put their lives on the line for this country.
That's one of the, I totally agree with you, what you said. Like I feel that's my personal, thoughts, and I respect people that may feel differently. But that's part of what is the freedom that we have. Although I do understand other people have different thoughts and opinions, but it's important to me, and as you said, I'm sure that Coach Mulkey and LSU will handle it, in a great way and in a solution. And I think it would stood out more because one team, like you said, was out there and they weren't, versus the second game that you mentioned that neither were. They were in their locker rooms preparing. So I think it's important to a lot of people, and I respect that. And if like you said, if people don't want to stand and they want to show their stance or opinion, you know, that's, have to respect that too. So,
okay. Well, we'll take one more call, and I suspect it's on this, and Christina, I think, is handling this. And of course, as you can imagine, sometimes people pick fights. In this case, I don't think Kim Mulkey picked a fight. She just has some people upset, and I think corrective measures will be taken. Dan downtown, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, do you think it's at least a bit hypocritical for these politicians to make a big deal out of the anthem during a basketball game, but criticize a black athlete for using it to show the problems with discrimination in this country?
Well, I'm with you, Dan. Expression is part of our country, and we're allowed to express ourselves as long as we're not being violent in just about any way we want to. And if somebody wants to use the national anthem to do that, I wouldn't do it. And if I were a coach, I might not be happy about it, but I do believe it's their right if they wish to do it. Christina, do you want to add or subtract anything?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and if I'm living out here, you know, California, there's people that have the same, you know, thoughts and opinions, and then there's completely opposite that that feel differently, and it's about their expression. You're right. I might not agree with it, but I have to respect that that is what they feel. And you know, in whatever organization or whatever, like you said, the coach, or it's not for me to decide. You know, it might be the organization or the university or people in a different position to deal with that.
I sure appreciate you taking our calls and giving your time today, Christina, and congratulations on your continuing success and your great ambassador for Louisiana on the West Coast. I sure appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate you.
Take care. And we're joined now by John Milkovich, lawyer in Shreveport, not far from where Christina grew up, and a conservative. He was the most conservative member of the Louisiana Senate from 2016 to 2020, but he was a Democrat then. He has now switched to the Republican Party. He is a supporter of former President Donald Trump, and we plan on getting to that. But John, I suspect you have some thoughts about the furor over LSU not being present for the national anthem the other night in a game against Iowa, and Governor Landry saying state officials should enact a policy requiring student athletes to be present for the national anthem. Your thoughts? John Milkovich. Do we have Mr. John? I think he's locked.
Yeah.
There we go. There we go. Go for it, John.
Well, of course, we want to honor our soldiers and veterans who have risked their lives, given their lives, come home with horrific injuries, not just in the recent wars, but for several centuries in America in our fight for freedom. And I think it's fair to also demand that if our politicians say they're patriots, I think there's some across the board demands, not only honoring our soldiers and our veterans in the anthem, but what about what are we doing about the weaponized immigration? Where are we on the fact that Dominion voting systems count votes in America in 28 out of 50 states? And folks, if you think Biden's going to win the vote, or you think Trump's going to win the vote, you're right, Jim, I favor Donald Trump. But how can anybody be sure when 28 out of the 50 states use Dominion voting systems to count their votes? And Dominion is a communist Chinese controlled. Let me say that again. Dominion is a communist.
Now, wait a minute. You're getting way off, and they just won a big lawsuit, and I'd rather not go there. I don't buy into what you're saying.
I don't want to put you in that place.
John, that's just crazy. That's crazy, John.
No, it isn't. If we're patriots, we need to be in a position. We need to be absolutely demanding integrity in Louisiana and American elections. It is a fact. Dominion is the voting system that's in use in Louisiana. It is a fact that Dominion is used in 28 out of the 50 states in America. It is a fact that Dominion was used in every one of the six battleground states in which millions of Americans believe the 2020 election.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Most Americans don't believe that the election was not stolen, and Dominion won a huge lawsuit against Fox News. And let's shut this down. You're not making any points by doing this, John. I do think that it's interesting that Donald Trump is embracing the Lord and is selling Bibles. And a story in the New York Times is the Dateline's Conway, South Carolina. Long known for his improvised and volatile stage performances, former President Trump now tends to finish his rallies on a solemn note. Soft, reflective music fills the venue as a hush falls over the crowd. Mr. Trump's tone turns reverent and somber, prompting some supporters to bow their heads or close their eyes. Others raise open palms in the air or murmur as in prayer. Trump's audience and his congregation and the former president, their pastor, as he delivers roughly a 15-minute finale that evokes an evangelical altar call, the emotional tradition that concludes some Christian services in which attendees come forward to commit to their Savior. And then the quote from Trump, "The great silent majority is rising like never before and under our leadership." Now, do you believe that Trump is chosen by the Almighty to be the leader of the free world, John?
I believe God is using him. I do. And of course, I think where it gets complex, and I don't think anyone ever wants to call me when they want sophisticated insights, because they know that I think just like Joe the bartender at Ramada Inn. But the fact of the matter is, as Bible students, and you know, we all know the Bible to one extent or the other, God has a habit, a history, a track record of using imperfect people. So if we say God is using Donald Trump, does that mean Donald Trump is perfect? It does not. There's only one perfect person that God ever used, and that person was both all God and all man. You know who I'm talking about, Jesus the Christ, our Savior, who was nailed to a cross. Given that, God used David, who got caught in a, you know, who involved himself in an adulterous affair, and then killed his lover's husband, had him sent to the front line of the battle. Did God use David? Yes. Did David sin? Yes. Moses was chastised in the Old Testament for getting prideful or over angry with the people of Israel. Did God use Moses? He absolutely did.
All right, so you believe that Trump is chosen and
I think God's using him, yes.
Well, would, if God chooses our leaders, did he also choose Biden?
Well, I don't believe that God chose Biden. I believe that there was election fraud in 2020. I'm on the record of saying that. I am what a lot of people would call an election denier. I do not believe that Joe Biden legally won the 2020 election.
We'll be back with John Milkovich, the former state senator, after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. John Milkovich, a firebrand from the North Country. Through the years, I've talked with him as a lawyer, and he represented people wrongly charged of murder through the years and successfully defended them and ultimately became such a well-known and popular figure in his home area that he ran for the 4th Congressional District, losing to Jim McCreary in Congress. But ultimately, he won in 2015. Senate seat, and he held it for one term, got 52% of the votes as a Democrat, and now has switched parties. Before we go back to John, I do want to hear a cut from James Carville on this show February 9th when he talked about how many evangelicals like John Milkovich believe that Donald Trump is the chosen one.
Have to go far to find these Christian nationalists who think that the Constitution of the United States, I'm not kidding you, was ordained by Jesus Christ and given to the founders and was written for the protection of Christians only. Don't doubt me on this, all right? Do your research. And East Baton Rouge Parish is crawling with these people. I'm doing some of my YouTube classrooms. I don't think people understand just how deep and serious this threat is. I really don't. And Trump is to turn the country over to him.
All right, that's James Carville. Now, I don't know that you would necessarily disagree with what Carville said, would you, John Milkovich?
Well, I mean, do I believe that that Louisiana is the Bible Belt, part of the Bible Belt? Yes. Is Shreveport maybe the buckle of the Bible Belt? Yes. Do I believe that Christian beliefs, you know, the Bible is so clear that if our foundational values are rooted in God and in his principles, that brings prosperity, peace, and justice. So, you know, as a Christian and as someone with, again, hopefully the common sense of Joe the bartender at Ramada Inn, I think peace is a good thing, prosperity, justice, families, protection, people helping each other. Those are all good things.
All right. Carolyn Jefferson Terrace, we want to get to a few people who have been waiting to talk with you, John. Senator Milkovich,
okay.
Once a senator, okay. Always a senator. And Carol, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Yes. What do y'all think about the ex-president Trump starting every rally with the Jan 6 Choir's rendition of the national anthem? And Kim Mulkey didn't pick the schedule of when that song's going to be played. She does the same thing every week.
All right. Well, what about Trump embracing the Lord, a guy who has more divorces than any president in U.S. history. In fact, more than all the others put together. There have only been two presidents who were divorced. One was Reagan, who had one, and now Trump has two. The other 43 people, have never been divorced. Your thoughts about this man who, and a week from now, a little over a week, on the 15th, he goes on trial for allegedly concealing hush money to Stormy Daniels, a pornographic film star who he's accused of having an affair with. Your thoughts, John Milkovich?
Why don't you ask me some easy questions, Jim? Listen, you know, I don't think the Christian community in America or anywhere in the world condones infidelity. I think we need to be faithful to our spouses and, you know, ask for God, the guidance of the Holy Spirit, for God to help us in doing that and living in community, living in church. But this, there are some moral anchors that get so lost in the superficial mainstream media treatment. Let's talk about a few things. Trump took a stand against abortion. Trump did not start a bunch of wars so his friends could make money. He stood up to the genocidal red Chinese communist regime. He has stood up against the isms, globalism, communism, socialism, Marxism, atheism.
All right. Paul downtown. Paul, you're on with Senator Milkovich. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing? Just a simple question. Why was something illegal or wrong several years back, and now everything's becoming legal? Just a simple question.
What are you talking about in particular?
Well, morals.
All right. John, if we had a relaxation of morals. Back in the day, of course, this country allowed slavery, condoned it, even had Supreme Court decisions condoning it. We've come a long ways, but are we becoming a more immoral society?
Well, look, the American journey is a tapestry of mistakes and magnificence and freedom and failure and fault and virtue and everything in between. The bottom line, and your point is well taken, the bottom line is America is a world historically unique experiment in American freedom. And America has done wrong things. And we could talk about, I mean, bringing slaves to America, are you kidding me? And large portions of those Africans died on the way over. I mean, that is absolutely unjustifiable and something that God, for which God will hold people accountable on Judgment Day. The way Indians were treated, the way ethnic groups were treated, and the way, but this is the reality. Slavery is not historically unique to the United States.
That doesn't make it, right.
Right.
But anyway, we were wrong about that. We've been wrong about a lot of things, John, even though we are, quote, a nation of Christians.
To finish the thought is that a Christian remnant and even majority stood up and said, it's enough. We've had enough.
All right.
Slavery. And that happened not only in the United States, but it also happened in England. We actually had our founding fathers had the courage and the love of faith, freedom, and family to go ahead and pass the United States Constitution that included a Bill of Rights for which actually Patrick Henry and his dad received little of the credit. People
use the Bible and the Constitution to promote slavery too. So we've gotten past that, but in a way, but in other ways, I'm not so sure. Back to the original topic, Gustavo Goodwood says, even by your woke standards, writing to me, this has got to be unacceptable, not being present for the national anthem. Kim has to go, and I love her, but she has to go. That's from Gustavo in Goodwood. Bill Huey, who says he served in the U.S. Air Force. I know he's a Vietnam guy, 73 to 93. Do you think the little dictator, he's referring to Governor Landry, will send in the state police or perhaps the National Guard to enforce the national anthem policy? Would that be an appropriate remedy to this, Senator Milkovich?
Look, I don't know all the details of when Coach Mulkey was on the court and when she wasn't, whether, you know, she says it was unintentional, may well have been. I think, look, let's just fix this going forward. That let's go ahead and synchronize our watches, and when it's time to honor the veterans and the soldiers and veterans and their families that have risked their lives and given their lives and come home with IED injuries, we should honor them. And I think this is fixable. And I think Coach Mulkey's probably first in line saying, let's get it right. Let's get it right for keeps. So
all right, there
I'm
you
all
go.
For let's get it right.
Amen. Patrick and Inniswald, but you got to be brief though. Patrick, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I kind of agree with your guess. Election fraud is very hard to prove after the fact. We need secure elections. What does he think about mail-in voting?
What about mail-in voting? Is that good, bad, or ugly?
Hey, look, this is crazy. This is Louisiana's voting system as we speak. We do not have paper ballots. We have electronic voting machines. The software has been created and or controlled by Dominion Voting System.
All right. And so I guess you believe mail-in balloting would actually be an enhancement. John Milkovich, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Good luck. We're joined now by Jalen Jones, student director of the Delta Mouth Festival, which is coming this week. And quite an array of activities going on right in our midst. And good morning to you, Jalen.
Hi, good morning.
And tell us, you're a student at?
I'm a student at LSU in their creative writing program.
And this is, of course, a festival that many writers treasure. Why?
Yeah, so we are putting together the Delta Mouth Literary Festival, which is happening this weekend, April 5th through 7th. And so since 2009, the annual Delta Mouth Literary Festival has been a flagship event for the literary arts in Baton Rouge. It's put together by students here, a fully student-run
event.
And
where will it be?
So we have a few locations. It'll be at the LSU Center for River Studies on April 5th, this Friday. And on April 6th, we have an event at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library at the River Center branch, and also a reading at LSU's French House. And then on Sunday, we have a reading at the Radio Bar.
And who are some of the participants? It's interesting that the Radio Bar.
You got quite
an eclectic group of places, but who are some of the major participants?
Yeah, so we have LSU alum Brooke Champagne, acclaimed writer Gina Chung, the novelist Justin Torres, whose novel Blackouts has won this year's National Book Award for Fiction, as well as local favorites like Carolyn Hembry, Annelle Lopez, Jamie Attenberg, and Charisma Price.
Do you have a particular favorite?
I don't know. I can't choose. They're all such literary stars.
You got to pick one. You got to recommend one and tell us where they'll be.
You know, I'm pretty excited for Justin Torres. I mean, he won the National Book Award this year, and he's going to be at Sunday's reading, April 7th, at the Radio Bar from 3 to 6.
All right. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday is where?
Friday is at the LSU Center for River Studies, and that's at 6 p.m.
6 o'clock. And then Saturday?
Saturday, we have two events going on. We have a panel in the morning starting at 11:30, and that's at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, River Center branch. And then at that night at 6 p.m., we have a reading at LSU's French House.
And then Sunday, it's National Book Award winner Justin Torres.
Yes, and also Jamie Attenberg and Athena Dixon, and that'll be at the Radio Bar starting at 3 p.m.
Okay, thank you, Jalen Jones. Good luck to you. And I do want to note that our first guest, Fred Dent, the financial analyst, is an underwriter for this program, and of course that in no way affects the way we converse with him, but we appreciate his support for WRKF, and we appreciate yours as well. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.